Greetings to everybody. I don't say good morning or good evening or good afternoon because I don't know where you are listening from. So, greetings. I will continue with some of the questions that I have received since the first time. So, now this is a question from Andreas, I think, and the question reads like this. In Abhidhamma are mentioned different kinds of attachment, among them clinging to rites, celebrations, regulations. I've experienced such kind of attachment in many Buddhist centers and groups. I understand it as the miserliness of the mind, which can appear, for example, as granting access or not granting access to teachings, archives, bibliotheca, and many similar arrangements. It is a hindrance, but I see that the understanding has the chance to grow in that way. Only it's very difficult to accumulate merit. When Shantideva came to Nalanda, he must have been already a realized master, so he brought the teachings from somewhere else, otherwise he would not be called Busuku. Is my wrongs? I understand that Dharma is the appearance of the mind, and the universities, archives, and the like shall be kept open, for there are sufficient hindrances in the mind itself. Yes, there are lots of different kind of attachments, and also, you know, too much attached to your own, like, it could be Dharma, it could be my school, my religion, my, you know, anything, you know, too much attachment to that can become a problem, even if it is a good thing. If I'm too much attached to that, then it will create aversion to the others. And so therefore the reaction with aversion, attachment, creates problems. Yes, Dharma centers and groups and monasteries and, you know, anything, as long as it is an institution, it's something with lots of people, human beings, it becomes something that is social, that is, there is politics comes in, there is economy comes in, there is all kind of human emotions and all different kind of problems come in. So therefore, one must not see Buddhist centers or Buddhist groups necessarily as ideal. It's not necessarily Dharma. It's a kind of organization which tries to organize things, you know. It tries to assist people to, like the Dharma Center is usually said, you know. Dharma is said like this. Dharma is the experience, realization, and the teachings. It is said, that's what Abhidhamma says, Abhidhamma Kosha says. Dharma is the realization or the experience of realization and the teachings. So therefore, to preserve Dharma is to practice, meditate, and then to learn and teach and learn. So therefore, Dharma Center is a place where we try to organize teachings, and then kind of facilities to practice. It is not possible that everything is perfect. If somebody expects perfect center or perfect group or perfect monastery, then that means everybody in there should be Buddhas and great bodhisattvas, which is not the case. So since it's run by people, samsaric people, like I and you, so it can't be. Now, the teachings, you know, there are all different kind of teachings. There are some teachings are most basic teachings, first level of teachings, second level of teachings, you know, a third level of teachings, and then some teachings are useful to some teachings are kind of too complicated, or, you know, not really useful to some people. So therefore, there are different kind of teachings. Like, for instance, you know, in a school there are classes, like from KG class to maybe, you know, the school final, or sometimes even in this school could be the college, so it's even the graduation or undergraduate classes. So if there is this, so, you know, you don't give the school final textbook to a KG student, because it wouldn't help, it would not be useful. So each kind of standard of class will be given that after having gone through the previous, you know, then you go step by step and study there. That's the ideal way. Of course, there could be a very, very brilliant, especially brilliant student who can kind of go many classes in 1 year, or, you know, things like that. There are also people like that. But generally, there is a kind of a thing. So this is why, you know, the different teachings are also a little bit restricted, or a little bit categorized. It's not ideal. It's not ideal. We don't know exactly who will be ready for what teaching and who is not. It's not. So there is a little bit of a buzzard thing, and it's not perfect, but we have to make some criteria of that kind. So that's what is usually done like that. And sometimes, you know, people charge a lot for these teachings. And sometimes people try to make it completely free. Now, there are lots of, you know, we don't know which is better. Some say that, you know, if you give it too free, then people don't value it, because, you know, and if you get things free, you don't value it, so you don't use it, and then it doesn't benefit you. So if it is a little bit more costly, then you don't get it unless you pay. So you pay it, so you must make the best use of it, so you study it and practice it with that kind of give more value to that. There is also that's also a fact. But then we also feel that, you know, Dharma should be for everybody, and it should be available for everybody. So therefore, we try to, you know, give it to everybody. So that is also one way. And like, we don't charge things for people, but you know, maybe they take something for the expenses and things like that. So that's one thing. I don't know what you are talking about, the Shantideva's story. Of course, when Shantideva came to Nalanda, he was already very highly learned and things like that. He studied by himself. I think he had his own teachers, you know. And it's not very clear, you know, Shantideva's life story is not that, we don't have a very, what can you say, elaborate biography of Shantideva. We have only certain stories and legends and things like that. But he already, yes, he already had his teachings. So that's that, I think. Then, Aline, another question. When I study a book, it helps me to write in the book with a pencil and to underline sentences, even if afterwards I delete it. But somewhere I feel uncomfortable with these habitual tendencies. Is it okay, or it is better to avoid it? Is there some recommendations about that point regarding the respect of Dharma books? I think it is completely okay. Even you know, great masters used to put notes on the books. Even that time, you know, like in Tibet, where the books were extremely rare, because you know, there were only two ways to get a book. One was your own kind of copying with your hand. Another was the wooden blocks, and wooden blocks, you know, they were maybe not very, you know, maybe one or two wooden blocks for the whole country of a book. And then, you know, sometimes you had to travel for months to find that kind of a place where they have the wooden blocks, and then you have to ask them to print it for you. And then they have to get paper and ink and all these things, and it's not always easy to get books. But even that time, you know, people used to, many great masters have made lots of notes on their own books. We still have some of them. That's a thing. But of course, it is also said that you should not, you know, you should not destroy, or you should not misuse books, because books are it's something to be revered, something to be respected. So one should not make kind of useless remarks, or you know, kind of spoil a page with just drawings, or you know, funny things, or things like that. But nowadays, you know, the books are so easy to get, you know, so maybe you can write whatever on it if you like, because most of the books, are your own. You know, it's nobody else uses them. In early times, you know, each book must be used by many people, and sometimes for many generations. You know, so that's the way it is. So the next question, and it's the last question in this series, is from Marilena Hatema from UK. In my meditation practice, I can feel really happy, but it does not last, and I fall back into habitual negative thought patterns easily. How do I stabilize the meditation practice so I can stay positive? Yeah, this is very usual. This is very common. This is for everybody. So you know, the idea is that that's why we need to meditate regularly, and you know, possibly every day, or even sometimes, you know, as many times as possible in a day, because you know, it's not something. It's not something, you know, that our habitual tendencies, our negative emotions, are much, much more stronger, much more long time in us than the meditation. So therefore, it takes time to become, you know, to become fully kind of trained in this. So therefore, we need to do again and again and again. It's not, we should not expect also that I do a little meditation will then kind of remain that peace or whatever all the time. You know, it's that's we need to train. That's why training is necessary. I think that's all. And thank you very much. So now I think answered all the questions that I have received so far. Thank you.